You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Culminating today's passage are some of the most familiar phrases and imagery of Jesus' message. Sheep versus goats, the care of the least of these, and you've done it to me. But it's just one episode sandwiched in between several other justice-oriented scenes crowded into Jesus' final discourses in Matthew. Right before the scene we're going to read, the scribes and Pharisees are denounced for their rejection of the Messiah and are threatened with the ultimate punishment. Then right after this judgment text come examples of the faithful and unfaithful servants and the parable of the talents. In both cases, those who are unfaithful to that with which they've been entrusted are punished for their poor stewardship. The expectation folks are being judged on in today's passage is that of service. And as I've already mentioned, the factor determining your sheepiness or your goatliness is the degree to which you care for the least of these. And who are they? Well, any and all who suffer the hardships listed in the text. Those who are hungry, thirsty, naked, sick, without a roof over their head, or in prison. Seldom is Jesus' message more clear than in Matthew 25. It's not about belief, but action. And action on behalf of and with those the culture ignores or leaves behind.
Our words of wisdom are from chapter 25 of Matthew, verses 31 through 45.
When he finally arrives, blazing in beauty and all his angels with him, the Son of Man will take his place on his glorious throne. Then all the nations will be arranged before him, and he will sort the people out, much as a shepherd sorts out sheep and goats, putting sheep to his right and goats to his left.
Then the king will say to those on his right, "Enter, you who are blessed by my Father. Take what's coming to you in this kingdom. It's been ready for you since the world's foundation, and here's why.
I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was homeless, and you gave me a room. I was shivering, and you gave me clothes. I was sick, and you stopped to visit. I was in prison, and you came to me."
Then those sheep are going to say, "Master, what are you talking about? When did we ever see you hungry and feed you? When did we see you thirsty and give you a drink? And when did we ever see you sick or in prison and come to you?" Then the king will say, "I'm telling the solemn truth. Whenever you did one of these things to someone overlooked or ignored, that was me. You did it to me."
Then he will turn to the goats, the ones on his left, and say, "Get out, worthless goats. You're good for nothing but the fires of hell. And why? Because
I was hungry and you gave me no meal. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was homeless and you gave me no bed. I was shivering and you gave me no clothes, sick and in prison, and you never visited."
Then those goats are going to say, "Master, what are you talking about? When did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or homeless or shivering or sick in prison and didn't help?"
He will answer them, "I'm telling the solemn truth. Whenever you failed to do one of these things to someone who was being overlooked or ignored, that was me. You failed to do it to me."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
After reading Matthew 25, a Bible study leader asked her group, "So, what would you do if you knew you only had about 4 weeks left before being divided between the sheep and the goats?" One person said, "Well, I would go right out and preach to everyone who hasn't accepted Jesus into their lives." Another member spoke up and said enthusiastically, "I would dedicate my remaining time to serving others." "Well, that's wonderful," gushed the group leader. Finally, one more gentleman spoke up and said, "I'd go directly to my mother-in-law's house for the whole time." The group leader asked, "What on earth for?" "Because that'll make it the longest 4 weeks of my life." Some of you might be thinking similar thoughts about the length of this series on being people of the way. But all these weeks have been leading up to asking the one question that puts it all into perspective. As our churches become smaller and grayer, as supporting aging buildings and paying clergy becomes financially difficult, what will we do? Churches and seminaries are already merging or closing. As our postmodern generations grow increasingly distant from the whole church experience, is there even a future for church? And if so, what will it look like? If those of us who are experimenting with different models do manage to survive, moving beyond the church doors and into the religionless Christianity that we've talked about, mainly pursuing ministries of peace and justice with the poor and marginalized, where will we meet to organize, to find support and nurture? How will we challenge ourselves to grow and mature or teach the way? How will we teach our children about the nonviolent transformation of the world, resistance to the forces of oppression like racism, sexism, violence, and empire? Where will they learn about active service to others? And if the church of the future is defined more by the way we live instead of what we believe, what will we even call ourselves? And does it matter? Here's the bottom line. Humanity's future depends on our collective ability, all of us, to embrace a diverse, pluralistic society that honors different belief systems and sees Jesus as one path among many in the search for meaning and wholeness. And so here we are. The next generation is facing a new era in the long history of Jesus followers, an era that will mean redefining much of what, for generations, we've assumed are our core identities, but in fact are culture-bound or time-bound ruts. Our guide to being people of the way, Kurt Struckmeyer, suggests two main ruts that we need to get out of. Number one, our outdated theology. Not just the grounding in the supernatural, but in transitioning from being purveyors of the gospel about Jesus into those who live out the gospel of Jesus. And then rut number two, moving our new content into a new container, one that calls people into communities centered not on buildings, but on radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, and simple living. Quaker pastor Philip Gully is one who wonders what the church would look like if it truly followed the way of Jesus. If the church were Christian, Jesus would be a model for living rather than an object of worship. Affirming our potential would be more important than condemning our brokenness. Reconciliation would be valued over judgment. Gracious behavior would be more important than right belief. Inviting questions would be valued more than supplying answers. Encouraging personal exploration would be more important than communal uniformity. Meeting needs would be more important than maintaining institutions. Peace would be more important than power. we would care more about love and less about sex. This life would be more important than the afterlife. I don't know about you, but that all sounds pretty good. The question remains, though, what would the container look like? First off, we'd probably do well to look back to what the early Jesus movement looked like, a loosely organized gathering of people that is simpler, smaller, and more agile, meeting in homes or public spaces equivalent to today's cafes or pubs. We wouldn't focus on the personal or spiritual needs of our members alone, but engage in service, the pursuit of justice, and seeing the world from the bottom and the margins of society. And it would probably shun the trappings of the institution and look a lot more conspiratorial. As Struckmeyer has called it, a conspiracy of love. Dr. Robin Myers, who some might remember speaking here at the Fountains, challenges us to break out of our culturally conditioned stupor and get back to the church's roots as a community of resistance. He asks, "Who thinks of the church anymore as a defiant community? We have to get back to obeying, as disciples, the radical demands of the kingdom of God." And guess what? Some people are already doing it. Their efforts may not look like what we think of as church, but they're worth checking out. The emerging church movement strives to live in small, loosely organized, egalitarian communities that integrate people from different social classes and focus on caring for the less privileged. Their focus is less on personal salvation, worship, and right doctrine than on service, compassion, and inclusivity. They might meet in the evening every other week as a house church in someone's home, which, if you're familiar with the New Testament, should sound very familiar. The churches that Paul established were all house churches. They might call themselves simple church, organic church, essential church, relational church, and micro church. You can also find them meeting in cafes, coffee shops, and pubs, places you'd likely find Jesus hanging out if he were here today. Another alternative model of church is the dinner church. Simple, unaccompanied music is sung, scripture explored, and prayers offered, all in the context of a home-cooked meal. At the end, they might pour a little extra wine and toast to Jesus, who is alive in us, luring us to take the way less traveled and to love our neighbors this week. Simple rituals, bread and wine, fueling a passion to work together, serving their neighbors. Then there's the little more intense group of intentional communities, or new monastics, where the members typically live together, sharing responsibilities and sometimes property and personal finances. They commit to following a rule of life, which may include vows of prayer, hospitality, service, witness, and accountability. And they immerse themselves in community life and service, often working in inner-city neighborhoods among the poor. Shane Claiborne, founder of the Simple Way community in Philadelphia, says this new monasticism is a movement of ordinary radicals, people who are not doing anything amazing, just living out the faith they claim to believe, hanging out with the neighborhood children, sharing food with people in need, eating the food their neighbors share with them, running a community store, growing gardens amid abandoned lots, and sharing life with their neighbors while trying to take care of each other. Shane says, "We set out not to start programs, but simply to be good neighbors." Okay, fine, but where does that leave us as an already established mainline congregation with an aging facility and graying congregation. Well, it may not seem like it, but we are a part of a quiet and steadily influential religious movement with deep roots in American history. As a member of the Progressive Christian Movement, we are the current torchbearers of the values that inspired 19th century abolitionists and mid-20th century civil rights activists. Churches of our ilk are a part of what once was called the social gospel movement, emphasizing Jesus' ethical teachings. While they might not get a lot of credit for it in the history books, our spiritual forebears have been instrumental for 150 years in opposing economic inequality, poverty, addiction, crime, racial tension, environmental degradation, child labor, lack of unionization, poor schools, and the dangers of war. One of the social gospel's most articulate voices, Baptist preacher Walter Rauschenbusch, preached all the way back in 1907. It's not a matter of getting individuals to heaven, but of transforming life on earth into the harmony of heaven. More than 100 years later, no truer words could be spoken. With the rise of the powerful religious right, our voices and our actions are needed more than ever. Hardly a day goes by when I'm not gobsmacked by the audacity of wildly conservative Christians working to suppress the rights of women and LGBTQ plus people, promote racism towards blacks and Asians, stir up Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, and threaten our very democracy with the promotion of white Christian nationalism. So you are needed, no matter what the church looks like, as a counter-narrative to the messages of hate and divisiveness rampant in our culture today. As people of the way, we are called to speak up, to organize, to rally, to march, to educate, to train, and to speak up for those who, as Jesus says in Matthew 25, are overlooked or ignored, the least and the last. Whatever the post-church church looks like, Jesus expects us not to worship him, but to act on his behalf in changing the world. We are called to become activists for a vision of a renewed human community and prophetic voices for compassion and justice on behalf of the poor, the marginalized, the excluded, and the oppressed. Look, post-church church may not even appear to be Christian, at least the way people understand Christian today. Action and contemplation inspired by the teaching of Jesus will be the key. As Kurt Struckmeyer pleads in the closing chapter of People of the Way, we are called to follow Jesus in the real world, in a nation where guns are considered sacred, where violence is glorified, where market capitalism is deified, where consumerism is celebrated, and where selfishness is the dominant political value. Add to that the challenges of institutional racism, alternative facts, unjust laws, climate change, and so much more, and you may be tempted just to throw up your hands in frustration. So the challenge and opportunity for the post-church church, whatever it looks like, is going to be helping people respond to current events without falling into a sense of helplessness, cynicism, and inaction. The post-church church needs to be the place where followers of Jesus, in the company of others, can come together for insight, support, and encouragement in working to create the better world that our hearts know is possible. What is left is for us to admit what futurist Lovett Weems reminds people of all the time. We cannot become what we need to be by remaining what we are. Our denomination, our place in the long flowing stream of the social gospel, our particular church, all have a long and storied history. But everything is changing around us. With all of our might, we have to resist the urge to respond with what one of my professors, Dr. Nancy Ammerman, has said is the most common response to change: to proceed with business as usual. And whatever our efforts to become the post-church church looks like, I promise you, it will be uncertain. It'll be messy. There will be dead ends. But we're in it together. Regardless, Rabbi Sharon Bruce, who leads a Jewish community in Los Angeles, says, "The goal is not to be quieted, to feel good, to get comfortable and settled while the palace burns. It is to be awake and to fight with love for the courage we need, for the family we yearn for the beloved community we're called to be, for the world we want our children to inherit." In the middle of what sociologists call an epidemic of loneliness, people are longing for genuine community, not just a loose gathering of people on Sunday for a saccharine dose of comfort and contentment. True community is more than just friendship and shared values. It's about acting together on a common vision of meaning and purpose. And that's the gift we have to offer the world. Being people of the way means navigating a path toward Jesus' vision of the way the world ought to be. It's not risk-free, and there's no assurance of success, as the world counts success. The only guarantee is continuing challenge. But guided by Jesus' vision and our commitment to put love first in the world, we are reminded that the journey together is the most important thing. As long as we continue to make compassion, love, and justice our guiding principles, the post-church church will find its way, and we can be proud to have been a part of preparing the ground for whatever and however it will be in the world. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.